This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Two words, people. Artificial and intelligence. Oh, wait, a couple of more words. Billions and billions of dollars. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizal. It is Wednesday today. This one is the 25th of October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Without putting too fine a point on it and setting aside just for a moment the really scary bits of AI, artificial intelligence is a business proposition, and Wall Street is still trying to figure out how it feels about it. We now have in hand the latest earnings report of two companies worth together $4 trillion. Alphabet, a.k.a. the corporate behemoth formerly known as Google, and Microsoft, a.k.a. the corporate behemoth formerly known as the company that brought you the Zune. Remember that? Anyway, Alphabet reported $77 billion in revenue the past 3 months, but Wall Street today was none too pleased. Shares off more than 9%. Traders were, however, much more excited about the 29% jump that Microsoft saw in revenue for its cloud computing division, which is very much tied up in its AI plans. Shares there, up 3%. Microsoft and Google have, of course, been rivals for a while now, and of late, Microsoft does seem to have been on the offensive. Marketplace's Matt Levin gets us going.
In the early 2010s, Microsoft launched an anti-Google ad campaign called Scroogled.
Don't get Scroogled. If you can't trust their app store, maybe you shouldn't trust Google for anything. Try Bing.
It didn't work. Once the scrappy upstart, Google grew to an estimated 90% of the search market. It then used those ad dollars to threaten Microsoft with free products like Google Docs and Google Sheets. So in the wake of ChatGPT, Microsoft has one word on its mind.
Revenge.
Ken Gorelski is a tech analyst for Wells Fargo.
Microsoft relishes its position as the challenger. For many years, it faced the scrutiny of being the leader.
Back in the late 90s, Microsoft was the cutting-edge tech giant facing an antitrust lawsuit from the federal government. That hurt its ability to invest in other businesses. It was Google that was acquiring startups like YouTube and Waze. But Scott Kessler at the investment research firm Third Bridge says starting a few years ago,
we've seen kind of a role reversal. Alphabet, I think, was more the subject of this legal and regulatory scrutiny.
So Google scaled back a bit on the acquisitions. Meanwhile, in 2019, Microsoft struck a deal with OpenAI, the makers of ChatGPT, which is now integrated into Bing. Brent Thill is with the investment firm Jefferies.
Their partnership with OpenAI has given them a huge advantage, and they are leading the pack in both revenue, mindshare, and market share.
Even beyond AI, Microsoft has more diversified revenue streams than Google does. There's Windows, obviously, also Microsoft Office, video games, but Thill says no one should count Google out.
Talk to anyone in the AI industry, they'll say the biggest vendor that they fear the most is Google.
He says Google just hasn't figured out a way to make money from their AI yet. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Yet. Wall Street today, tech overall kind of got beat up. The broader markets beat up as well, just less so. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We learned this morning, thanks to the Census Bureau and the Department of Housing and Urban Development, that sales of new single-family homes, that is, homes that have just been built, to be clear, those sales were way up in September, 759,000 of those sales, 12% more than in August, 34% more than a year ago. And with so few existing homes for sale, used homes is another way to think about that. A whole lot of prospective buyers are looking at new construction, and builders are offering incentives to help close the deal, as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
At the end of last year, Clark Ivory was getting really concerned about his business. He's CEO of Ivory Homes, a building company in Utah. When interest rates spiked,
we just saw traffic go to almost nothing and sales really dried up.
Now, though, they're in a much better position.
We sort of found our footing. We figured out what we needed to do to buy down interest rates to make it still affordable for people.
Today, they're able to offer mortgage rates around 6 or 6.5%, much better than 8. Allie Wolf at the housing data and consultancy firm Zonda says a lot of home builders are working with lenders to offer lower mortgage rates or offering money toward closing costs or other incentives.
Builders will say, hey, we have $50,000, for example, and we will let you use this $50,000 however you want.
A lower mortgage rate or closing costs, maybe a fancier kitchen? Clint Mitchell, a builder in Indianapolis, says his company, Estridge Homes, just started offering incentives in the last month as mortgage rates got closer to 8%. They're also doing buy downs, but only on some of their homes, ones that are already done. And he says it's bringing people in.
We haven't had very many that actually have taken the incentive that we've been offering because they've chosen to build, but it has caught people's attention.
Not all builders are able to buy down mortgage rates, says Logan Modishami at Housing Wire.
Smaller builders don't have the money that the big publicly traded builders have. They can't offer the buy downs. They don't have the profit margins to do so.
But for those that can, like Clark Ivory in Utah, it makes financial sense. On a $500,000 loan,
typically we're spending $25,000 to $30,000 to get rates where we want them to be, but it's far better to do that than it is to discount $80,000 to $90,000, which is what you'd have to do to get the same payment.
And it's definitely better than not selling the home at all. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
We are getting older, all of us. Baby boomers in particular are retiring, and as they get older, they get sicker. And that is having, and will keep on having for years, a big impact on this economy. Nursing homes come to mind. Lots of us would probably rather age at home, but most of us are probably going to need care and facilities that can offer more support. Now, how much support is enough support? The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services have proposed a rule setting minimum staffing requirements for nursing homes. But as Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports, the plan to improve patient care like that is running into some problems of the current economy.
The proposed rule requires long-term care facilities to have a registered nurse on call 24/7 and set a minimum number of hours RNs and nurses' aides spend with patients each day. The proposal is open for public comment now, and thousands of people have already weighed in, including 62-year-old Alicia Gordon, who read me some of her comment.
Many of the facilities in the USA are death traps. I've seen firsthand. It makes me sick to know when I can't afford care for myself, I'll be left to die in a hellhole.
She lives in Annandale, Virginia, and says she's been a caregiver for decades for her husband, her sister, her father until he passed, and now her mother. Gordon says she avoids letting family members spend the night alone in a hospital or nursing home.
It's not the quality of the care that's available. It's the amount of care that's on duty. The nurses, for the most part, are amazing. They're overworked. They're exhausted. They're just not enough bodies.
And that's actually the same reason why the nursing home industry says they oppose these rules as currently written. There just aren't enough bodies. Martin Allen is with the American Healthcare Association, an industry group for skilled nursing and assisted living facilities.
We would like to hire more nurses and nursing assistants in order to meet this mandate, but they're just not there. And while there is a phase-in for this proposal, you know, we don't think that it's realistic.
And for evidence, folks in the industry point to what's already happening. At the nonprofit Virginia Mennonite Retirement Community in Harrisonburg, Virginia, whole wings of the skilled nursing facility sit empty. Rebecca Klein is an RN and director of nursing there and says they technically have space for 120 patients, but only have staffing for 90, and just barely. Klein says she's constantly trying to fill open jobs.
So we have approximately 3 full-time nurse positions and multiple part-time and flex positions.
Plus, she wants to hire another 10 certified nurses assistants. But competition is tough, and not just in Virginia. According to Leading Age, which represents nonprofit aging services, we'd need another 90,000 nurses to meet the proposed mandate. In the meantime, facilities all over the country are short-staffed, and that's exhausting for the nurses who are working. Joan Strassner is a licensed nurse practitioner and care guide at VMRC.
Sometimes I miss some stuff, but all of that is just to say that resident care comes first, and I'm not going to sit and read emails if someone needs a shower.
Or just wants to spend some quality time with her.
You want to do just a little talk with Jesus?
Yeah, that's it.
I once was lost in sin, but Jesus took me in.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services proposal calls for a staggered implementation. In the meantime, Deb Bakurjian at the Betty Irene Moore School of Nursing at UC Davis says the industry could be raising wages and investing more in training to address the staffing shortage.
If we don't pay attention to this, we're going to have some terrible outcomes as more and more of our older adults get to this time in their life where they may need extra help.
The comment period on CMS's proposed rules closes on November 6th. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Coming up.
So our main driver is prescribed grazing.
A shepherd and her sheep. But first, let's do the numbers. Yeah, the Wawa's today. Dow Industrial's down 105 points. That's about 0.3%. Finished at 33,035. And yes, 0.3% is not enough for the Wawa's, but hang on to your hats. The NASDAQ down 318 points, 2.4%. 12,821. The S&P 500 down 60 points, 1.4%, 41.86. We heard from Matt Levin about some of the tech stocks dragging that NASDAQ into correction territory. That happened today. It closed more than 10% below its most recent high. But do not fear, because markets go down too, people. That's what happens. Anyway, in other tech news, Apple announced it would raise the monthly cost of its streaming service. Apple thus down 1.3%. Its price hike follows those of rivals Netflix, which lost 0.6% today. Also Disney, down almost 2.4%. Bond prices were down, too. What happens then? Come on, you know the answer. Yields go up. 10-year T-note, 4.95%. You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. It has been a bit of a dance getting the EV market off the ground in this country. And more often than not, that dance has been two steps forward, one step back as consumers and car makers try to decide where they are on electric vehicles. This week, the dance has just been one step back, full stop. GM said it's going to slow production of three of its EV models and that it's going to scrap a deal to develop affordable EVs with Honda. Affordable being the key word there, because even though prices have come down and the federal government is chipping in with rebates, the road to affordable mass market EVs is long and bumpy. Marketplace's Elizabeth Trovall has that one.
Internal combustion engines have been making cars go since the late 19th century. What that means in economists speak?
We've got tremendous economies of scale.
When you make a lot of something, you can make it cheaper. And Michael Robinette with S&P Global Mobility says for EV manufacturing, there's enormous effort and capital involved to get those economies of scale, which is why news about GM didn't take him by surprise.
It was always going to be what we call lumpy. It was going to have spurts and stops.
It's hard to build up new supply chains of EV things like batteries and e-motor systems. And forget about turning profits right away. With new car technology, it can take a while, says Gil Tao with UC Davis.
There is no money-making if you count the EVs they were selling this year. You need to think about it as an investment that will be paid back in 10 years or even more.
This is how the business works. Yale University's Kenneth Gillingham says, consider the Toyota Prius, a groundbreaking hybrid which lost money for years.
And then it turned out to be a very, very profitable vehicle.
He says EV prices today are set with initial losses in mind.
They're trading off how much money are we willing to lose in order to really gain some market share and gain some brand credibility in the EV space.
That doesn't mean new EVs are affordable, with prices averaging well above $50,000. Though Jessica Caldwell with auto research firm Edmunds says new gas vehicles aren't very affordable either these days.
The percent of new vehicles sold under $20,000 is practically zero.
And pricing aside, she says consumers are also facing high interest rates, and a lot of the folks who were enthusiastic about EVs have already bought them.
And we're kind of hitting folks that have to be sold on EVs.
Meaning charging infrastructure has to be in place before the average person starts driving one off the lot. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
Everybody likes a park, right? Nice, calm, green spaces, a break from the daily grind. So stipulated. The catch, though, is inflation. With construction costs higher and city budgets not, it is getting trickier for municipalities to prioritize and thus build more parks. Patrick Sisson wrote in Bloomberg City Lab the other day, though, about low-budget parks and how cities are investing in them. So we called him up to talk about it. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kai.
Tell me about this park in Hayward, California, that you start this piece with, and what makes it so special just cost-wise?
Well, yeah, basically parks of this nature, it's a linear park. It runs alongside a very busy road, Mission Boulevard in Hayward. And typically parks of this size run about $50 or $60 a square foot for design and development. Mm-hmm. The company that did this, Surface Design, managed to do it for $750. And the reason they save so much money is because they reuse materials. They actually scavenge stuff from construction sites, old fallen trees, reuse those as benches, and figured out how to significantly reduce the cost of this park. The landscape architect for the city was really doubtful they'd be able to do it because you just saw the budget shortfall, and they managed to make it work.
They had to get creative, shall we say, because of those budget shortfalls, right? And this isn't just Hayward, it's cities and municipalities all across the country.
Yes, parks are facing a lot of the same economic challenges that every sector of the economy has faced over the last 3 years. Costs have been rising significantly. Everything from steel to playground equipment to installing bathrooms, doing landscaping, not to mention labor costs, have really shot up, which is making it really hard to maintain and build new parks.
What does this park look like? I mean, if you drove by on Mission Boulevard in Hayward and you look to your right or your left, I suppose, what would it look like?
Yeah, you'd see a long winding path with gravel on either side, a lot of old redwood trees that had been cut down and turned into seating. You know, it was a park before, but it just, you know, didn't get sort of that tender loving care, was really used a lot for dog walking. Now it's really come alive and it's become much more of like a community gathering place and sort of a resource.
Yeah, well, we should say, you know, parks aren't just for dogs, right? I mean, it goes to mental health. It goes to also, oh, by the way, climate change and urban heat islands and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, as a lot of us discovered, especially during the pandemic, you know, parks are really a resource for so many things. And, you know, more and more research comes in every day about the benefits of parks in terms of mental health, as you mentioned, cooling effects, resiliency in terms of absorbing water and climate change. So, you know, the need and demand for parks has really exploded over the last couple of years.
I wonder how big a challenge it was for the folks in Hayward, but also elsewhere in the country as they try to do, you know, nice parks for less, managing people's expectations, right? Because you could see somebody saying, wait, I want a really nice thing, not a cheap thing.
Yeah, right. I mean, and this is really important. The idea is not like quick, fast, and easy because you want something that really lasts, right? You know, what really should be the goal here, especially when you talk with a lot of advocates, is creating parks and expanding networks so everyone has access. The Trust for Public Land has this 10-minute park campaign, and the idea is to create a park within a 10-minute walk of where everyone lives. Right now, one in three Americans doesn't have that.
Yeah, that seems kind of extraordinary, actually. One in three Americans doesn't have a park within 10 minutes.
Yeah, right. Parks are green space. Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways, though, that you can do this without having to necessarily expend a ton of capital because, you know, creating a new park requires land and that can be very expensive. You know, you've seen a lot of programs in cities, New York City, for example, but many others where they're opening up city playgrounds. This has been in existence for a while and it's really caught on and really helped increase that access.
Yeah. Patrick Sisson at Bloomberg City Lab, writing on parks and low budget parks, to be clear. Patrick, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There was an article in the New York Times this morning, the headline of which read, "Is California's fire season over?" While those of us out here certainly hope so, spoiler alert, it's probably not. Yes, California's fire season has been relatively mild so far, but fire season almost everywhere is increasingly becoming fire year as the climate changes, and so some communities are turning to more ancient methods of fire mitigation. That's the setup for today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Brittany Cole Bush. I go by Cole, and I am the owner-operator of Shepherdess Land and Livestock out of the Ojai Valley in Ventura County. Shepherdess Land and Livestock is a prescribed grazing business with sheep and goats. They're able to go in places that it would be untenable, unsafe, not even possible to put mowers or large equipment to make these very important fire breaks around our built environment. Our clients range from public agencies,
fire departments, and private landowners. Anyone who manages or owns land that is a fire hazard, they tend to be our clients. My first opportunity to get exposed to shepherding and working on the land with animals was actually after adopting a retired herding dog, Becky. Becky was older in her life. She had had puppies and she was starting to get a little tired, but this mentor of mine didn't want to take her away from the land and animals because that's what she was born and bred to do. So essentially, with taking on Becky, I essentially adopted a job to work on that ranch. While I was there with Becky, I fell in love with both the animals and also the positive impact that they were doing to this landscape. And that's how my story started. It's taken me over a decade to have all of the pieces put together as a first generation agrarian to start this business. Shepherdess Land and Livestock has been in business for 3 years. Diversity in the revenue streams that we have is really important. So our main driver is prescribed grazing, providing this ecosystem service for the public and public agencies. Additional revenue streams include our education and training. And then our third revenue stream is producing wool. I feel that we are creating a new economy, creating new jobs that get people back into what it means to be a part of this very important cycle of stewarding our lands.
Cole Bush, up in Ojai, Ventura County, California. You can tell us about your economy, whether you're putting animals to work in the public good or not. You can do it at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, Bitcoin, while still well below its record highs, is having something of a renaissance. The OG cryptocurrency was back above $35,000 for a hot minute today. But number one, consult your own financial advisor. Number two, do not put crypto in your retirement account. All right, we got to go. Here's your moment of economic context. Saw this on CNN, some data from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau about credit cards in this economy. The CFPB says cardholders were hit with $105 billion in interest on their credit card debt last year. Now you know why we give you the 10-year every day, right? 4.95% today. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Justin Dueler, Drew Jostat, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.